Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and welcome to my new podcast, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. Today, we are speaking with actress and writer Ashley Griffin. Hi, Ashley.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
Good. I'm so excited that we're getting to do this. We have so much to talk about. So why don't we just jump right in?
Sure. That sounds great.
First of all, you have an off-Broadway play coming up, potentially, called Trial.
Sorry. Okay. My show had a very successful run off-Broadway at the American Theater of Actors last year, and since then there's been a lot of development. We did a reading presentation at the Tilla Center, and we're in talks about next steps with the piece, but there's hopefully some exciting things in the works with it. And director Lori Petty and I won a big award for it, and I got a county commendation for the piece a couple months ago, which was really amazing. So yeah, so lots of good things in the works for it.
So this show, Trial, it's based on a true story.
Yes.
And it's a play about a survivor of sexual abuse.
It's more complicated than that. I feel like that's what a lot of people have seen about it because of a lot of the conversations around it. And we've been partnering with the wonderful Well Life Network on it. So the play, it's not about sexual trauma. The play, although it deals with those themes, it's about the complex nature of forgiveness and justice versus mercy. So the play takes place in a sort of Kafkaesque corporate afterlife where a young woman has been waiting for 12 years for her paperwork to go through the corporate bureaucracy so she can move on. She died when she was 15. And she's approached by somebody from upper management who tells her the man who was indirectly responsible for her death has just died, and the state of his soul is in question, and she has to serve as judge and jury to determine what happens to him. So the crux of the play takes place in the sort of afterlife courtroom where the evidence is reliving scenes R-Town style, and it really deals with justice versus forgiveness, and that's a very complex issue. But it does bring in a lot of those other themes into it significantly, obviously.
And with the play dealing with justice versus forgiveness, in writing the show, from your own experience, did you learn to forgive or to get justice served, or is part of like doing the video for Well Life part of your healing?
That's a really great question. It's a very complex question that could probably take several hours to fully answer. The short version is I don't think I could have written the piece in the first place if I hadn't already sort of gone through my process of answering that question. I mean, certainly dealing with the show and all that has solidified that, but it's a process that took me a very long time and I had to go through before any of this. I don't think that speaking about these issues or addressing them publicly or being immersed in them in a professional way is something that you should necessarily dive into when you haven't done the emotional work of sorting your feelings out about that for yourself. So it's just, I mean, it's obviously a daily thing that one has to struggle with and think about, but most of my journey took place before the process of all this began.
And did writing continue to help you, or what did you learn about yourself or the process that you went through to heal from writing the show?
Oh goodness, that's also a complicated question. Well, I wrote the play in 9 days. I'm a very fast writer, so this wasn't necessarily a piece that I was sitting with for years and years. That was a long process. It was sort of the culmination of everything I'd been going through expressed, and it was I think the most cathartic in the sense of sort of publicly stating it in a way, although there's a lot of fiction wrapped up in the piece, obviously, as well. But it is based on a true story significantly. So, yeah, it continued my process. It's what I think one of the biggest things is it's what allowed me to start speaking out about it publicly, because it's not something that I really talked about before, not necessarily because I didn't want to or was uncomfortable, but I have found throughout my life that other people are very often uncomfortable and don't want to hear about it. So it was sort of a reclaiming of my voice and my story in a way, and that's what was really powerful about it. And I think obviously we create art partially for ourselves, certainly that's what we all do, but I think that it has to be for other people significantly. And so a lot of the creation of it was not so much about me and my process and what I wanted to do for me. It was, what is the story? What's the story that needs to be told? And what's the gift that maybe I can give to others through it?
That's wonderful. And I got that sense from the video that you did for Well Life Network as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
So now I have to ask, what has it been like to work with Lori Petty?
Lori is wonderful. She's so great. I'm picturing her listening to this right now and laughing. But I've been a fan of Lori's for a very long time, as many, many people have been, obviously, and she's been very inspirational to me. The thing that brought about us working together on this was I discovered her wonderful film, The Poker House, which I highly recommend everybody go out and watch. It was her directorial debut. She also kind of discovered Jennifer Lawrence and Chloe Grace Moretz in a way. I think it was Jennifer Lawrence's first film. And what Trial is for me, The Poker House was for her. Mm-hmm. And it's just an incredible film anyway, but at the end it also says that it's her story. And I had never knowingly, I'm sure I have because statistically I met many people, but I had never knowingly met somebody else who had gone through something somewhat akin to what I did, not necessarily in individual instances, like the specifics of our story, but the essence of it. And I'd also never seen real art that was dealing with this. Like there aren't really other commercial plays or films and stuff that really are delving into this issue. So I just took a chance and wrote to her reps with the script and was like, hey, you don't know who I am. This is who I am. I swear I'm not crazy. And this is why I feel like you would be a great fit for this piece. And like 2 weeks later, I got a call from her and we met and we really hit it off. We just hit it off as artists and as people. And we have a lot in common. And she's brilliant to work with. She's a we all know what a phenomenal actress she is, but she's a phenomenal director. She's great at working with people. She has a great vision, and she's just a lovely spirit. So they say you should never meet your heroes, but I think that you absolutely should if they're like Lori Petty. And if anybody has the opportunity to work with her in any capacity, please do so. She's wonderful.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, we look forward to hearing what further developments come with the show, and hopefully another run somewhere would
be
terrific.
That would be great.
So you have another play that's getting a reading in October called Shadowlands.
Yeah, the Shadowlands, not to be confused with another play in existence called Shadowlands.
Oh, okay.
The is very important.
That is very important. Yes. We don't want to think you're plagiarizing anything. So The Shadowlands.
Yes.
What can you tell us about the show?
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities. And I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, callmeadam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.
Sure. The Shadowlands is it's a big piece. It was, as I just said, I'm a very fast writer. Like I write most things in like 9 days. It took me a year to write The Shadowlands. And I started writing it because I started writing it the day after the Orlando shooting. Obviously that impacted many people. One of my dearest friends was very impacted by that, and I remember speaking to them the day afterward, and I had all these things that I wanted to say about not just that, but you know, we were dealing with the rise of Trump and all that, and just what it meant to be a human being living in our world today. And I just, all the things that I had in me, I couldn't get out in like a sentence. And so I wrote this play for them. And it's been described as if Lewis Carroll wrote Angels in America. It opens the day after the Orlando shooting. It spans about 3 years. It goes into the future of where we are now. And it plays with time, it plays with historical events, but basically it follows Matt, who's a young man who loses his partner in the Orlando shooting, and his best friend, this girl named Cassandra, who's aptly named, and you're not quite sure if she's a little crazy or a little bit of a prophet. And Matt kind of goes off the deep end, and his life intersects with three groups of extremists, a group of right-wing politicians, a Democrat, not Democrat specifically, but a liberal who kind of goes off the deep end, and a group of Middle Eastern terrorists. And by the end of the piece, only one person is left alive. It sort of asks the question, what would happen if the extremists won? Like, if the only people left alive were people who completely agreed with you. But also just what it means to be a human being today, and about the nature of love and the importance of it. And it's a heavy piece. It's a big piece. It's structured like The Ferryman, so it's three acts with two intermissions.
Oh, okay.
It had development at La Mama, and it's about to have a very big reading. We're aiming at the end of October. And we're interviewing some really extraordinary directors, and our producers have worked with really phenomenal organizations, and there's been a lot of significant interest in it, which is great. I'm very, very proud of the piece. It's very poetic. It's very my niche. It deals with magical realism and heightened language. And yeah, I think everybody will, there's something in it that will affect them deeply, and there's something in it that will offend everyone. So
it's always good to offend people, because that's what causes conversation.
Well, hopefully offending in a loving way in which we are asking questions of ourselves, nothing that's meant to do something negative.
No, right, right. It'll create conversations afterwards, and people will talk about it and keep thinking about it. You also have two other plays that you're working on, Peculiar Creatures and The Opposite of Love.
Yeah.
What do you want to tell us about those shows?
Sure. Peculiar Creatures. So you're familiar with my play Snow, and I sort of feel like, well, Peculiar Creatures and Opposite of Love I wrote together right after I'd finished. So Trial Snow and Shadowlands feel like a trilogy I didn't realize I was writing. They're not connected by plot in any way, but thematically they revolve around similar ideas. And I wrote Peculiar Creatures and The Opposite of Love sort of immediately after finishing those three plays, partially as an intellectual exercise, where I realized that my niche really is magical realism and heightened language. So I'm like, great, let's take those away and work outside your comfort zone. So Peculiar Creatures kind of jumps the shark on magical realism and goes full surreal. And one of the characters doesn't speak at all. And so technically a lot of it came out of, I'm also a dancer, and I found wonderful physical moments in shows, and wondering how I can use that vocabulary. The Opposite of Love technically came out of, 99% of what I see coming out of writing programs are a bunch of like 20-somethings sitting around drinking, kind of talking about nothing in real time. And I'm not the biggest fan in general of that. And I'm like, great, you can't not be a fan of a genre of play, so you need to write one. So The Opposite of Love, it takes place completely in real time. There's no magical realism. There's no heightened language. And so they're both very out of my comfort zone in a way. Peculiar Creatures, we've been developing. I've been the artist in residence, the Axis Theater Company, for the past year. Mm-hmm. And Peculiar Creatures is a surrealist play that revolves around an adult brother and sister who, when sister was 8 and brother was about 18, they experienced a very traumatic incident, after which sister stopped speaking completely. And they are each other's entire world. They don't interact with anybody else. They're literally everything to each other. She has a physical language that she's created that's somewhere between sign language, dance, and sort of idioglossic twin speak, that brother can speak to her with as well. And then their lives are upended when a stranger shows up. So we've been developing that for the past year, in association with Jeffrey Denman, who's amazing, and I've been working closely with Mick Blyer. And we've literally created this vocabulary, because this isn't something you can just find a couple gestures with. We needed to be able to fully communicate with it. So we've been developing that, and that is at now, as at this moment, sort of slated to talk about going into production in the spring.
And at Access Theater?
No, we're undecided about where that's going to go up. And The Opposite of Love has been described as if Pretty Woman was a Black Mirror episode sans tech. So there's not a ton I can say without giving away the twist at the end, but basically it's about not a social, a female trust fund baby who's in grad school, and she has experienced trauma in her life, and in an attempt to quote unquote get over it so she can be normal, she hires a male escort to just sort of help her, you know, get over losing her virginity. And the encounter does not go terribly well, and he, realizing that she's kind of a cash cow, convinces her to become one of his regular clients so he can come back every week and they can just talk about whatever, knowing he's going to be making bank off of it. So the crux of it is them having conversations about, in today's world, what it means, what intimacy means, what love means, what relationships mean. And then there's a darker twist that happens at the end. And Neil Gooding has signed on to produce and direct it, who runs Gooding Productions. They're the organization that brings most of the Broadway shows to Australia, and he's done some really incredible work. So we're in talks. We're in the beginning talks about when that's going to go up. But he's officially signed on board, and that's awesome. And we did a reading of it at ART in April. And yeah, so those are sort of the most immediate things. And then I have lots of other things that are revolving. I just had a reading of a new musical of mine that's a comedy parody. So for my fans of my Twilight parody musical, getting back to that.
Yes, I saw that as well.
And that's a technically three-person, kind of mainly two-person musical that's sort of title of show meets some of the deeper themes of, like, Merrily We Roll Along in kind of a meta context. So the concept is a composer lyricist team, which would be played by myself and my composer partner Evan J. Newman, have been picked up by a big, like, Hollywood producer that's like, your show is great, with a few tweaks I think it could be a big hit. And so this is their big industry presentation, but through working with said producer, they've been forced to make a lot of changes to the show. So on the one hand, it sort of parodies a lot of things about the current state of commercial art in general. The end of Act 1 is the entire theater is flooded, the audience is given scuba equipment, and the beginning of Act 2 is an underwater ballet with mermaids. It's great, but the show is meant to take place in a black box with just a keyboard, with the two of us having to, like, do the entire show for everybody, but then opens up to bigger questions about what it means to make art, and what it means to sell out or not, and what the state of art is in our culture and whatnot. And then I've been in development with my musical Lyra with director Rachel Klein, and we've been doing development on that for the past year. And so lots of things. And then I'm acting and things too. And I've done a couple TV shows this year, and I did an off-Broadway play, The Neurology of the Soul, that just got nominated for some great awards, which is great. So all the things that I'm doing.
That's so exciting.
Thank you.
So much going on. You also have a podcast called Stage Directions.
I do.
It just started as well in June. Well, June
started,
seemed to be like the first.
It started
one
couple,
the first
like
episodes.
Yeah.
Ago, yeah. Yeah. So, how did you start it? What do you like about it?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes, where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying,
approached by Chris Peterson, who runs the Onstage Network, who, they're amazing. I think there was some recent poll that they're like one of the top five theater sites, like, in the world or something. Oh, wow. Now. And they do a lot of great stuff. And he was a fan of what I did and asked me to start this podcast. And I'm sort of being billed as the theatrical Hermione Granger, which I think is hilariously appropriate, given that the teachers at NYU used to call me that, not necessarily always in a nice way. But I have sort of an eclectic knowledge, and I've taught at NYU and so the podcast is sort of spanning the things about theater specifically that you always wanted to ask or didn't know you didn't know. And it's sort of a combination between my talking about things such as, I think the first one was about the dichotomy between critical and audience reception in contemporary theater and what that means. Mm-hmm. And then I also interview lovely, smart people about stuff. I did a great interview with Broadway star Sarah Jean Ford. Sarah Ford. Technically, she's Sarah Jean Ford. She's trying desperately to get rid of the Jean. If anyone knows of Sarah Jean Ford in Equity, please give me a call. Or Sarah Ford in Equity, so that she could possibly buy her name back. And it's been really fun and gives me an opportunity to sort of just be a nerd and let my theater nerdiness out and shine.
I love it. Well, isn't that why we all do podcasts or interviews?
Yeah.
So we can all be nerds.
For sure.
So I always end my podcast. I'm not going to say all my interviews, but for the podcast, I'm ending all of them with this question.
Okay.
And it plays on the title of Burying It All with Call Me Adam. Mm-hmm. So if you were to bear it all, what is one detail about yourself that you would reveal that you have not told yet?
That's a great question. Truthfully, I don't know if there really is something, because I don't know. I think I'm a generally forthcoming person, and I like to be open about myself, and especially with doing the Well Life speech and everything, you know, it's definitely sharing a lot. So I don't necessarily think that there's something big that I haven't really shared in an interview. Oh, this is random. One of the things I do, I came up with some good ones. I'm synesthetic, which I don't know if many people know what that is.
No.
I'm a synesthete. It's a thing where it means that the basically senses in your brain kind of get mixed up, and there's like tons of different kinds you can have, but it means that maybe when you hear a sound, color gets activated or whatnot, and I have 12 different kinds of it, which can be a little overwhelming, but I've sort of learned how to harness. And so one of the things, it's very difficult sometimes to quiet my mind because of all the sort of sensory input. So one of the things that actually kind of calms me and lets me focus a little bit is conducting to really complicated music, because it sort of distracts all of my senses. So I like to find pieces of music that have a lot of like changes in time signature and stuff, and I'll just listen to it and kind of conduct through it. It's sort of, I guess, the closest that I would get to doing math for fun, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then I'm synesthetic and have lots of different kinds of synesthesia. So
I love it. That is definitely something that I did not know about you. So that's perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for being such a supporter of me,
over
all the years. Like, we first met during the Twilight musical.
Yes.
So thank you so much for everything.
And tell all the listeners where they can find you on the social media.
Sure. Well, my website is ashleygriffinofficial.com. Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y, Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N. Yes, Griffin, like Gryffindor. AshleyGriffinOfficial.com, because AshleyGriffin.com is owned by a 5-year-old who would not sell me the domain name. So I took a page out of Emma Watson's book and became Ashley Griffin Official. I am on Facebook as Ashley Griffin Official. I'm on Instagram as Ashley Griffin Official, and I'm on Twitter as Ashley J. Griffin.
Terrific.
Yeah. So come stalk me.
Amazing. Amazing. Everybody will. Don't stalk her, but do follow her.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Awesome.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. Callmeadam.com.